The Pair Advantage Podcast, episode 5010. Today we continue our chapter-by-chapter audio summary of a book, The Power of Peers. The Company You Keep Drives Leadership, Growth, and Success by Leon Shapiro and Leo Battari. I would encourage you to go to Amazon, anywhere books are sold, and buy a copy of this book. The foreword is by Rich Karlgaard, publisher of Forbes. It's a good read, and you can go into greater detail, obviously, by reading the book, but I'm giving you a sense of it as we work our way, and today is Chapter 8. It's entitled, Be Accountable. Hey, welcome to Dallas-Fort Worth Inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell, your host here at the Peer Advantage Podcast. Glad that you're here. Hope you will subscribe. The chapter begins with a story of Pete. Pete is a co-founder and a CEO of a company called Instavisor, and he is also was a member of the 2000 and 2004 Olympic U.S. Men's 8 rowing team. This is a sport I know nothing about, but it's not important if you know something about the sport. He does know about winning, and he knows about accountability. In his sport, the team members, well, they're literally in the same boat. He tells the authors about an experience he had in the 2000 Olympics in Sydney. The team was undefeated during the Olympic cycle process leading up to the games, and they were heavy favorites to win the gold, but they didn't. They finished fifth, no medal at all. And some members of the team, well, they were just going to be too old to compete in 2004, and it was just a dreadful, awful experience. Well, looking ahead 4 years to the 2004 Olympics in Athens, some of these athletes decided they weren't going to compete. You know, some of them were married, they had kids. I mean, you know, enduring another 4 years of prep time to get up to speed with the Olympics was just a price they, at that point in their life, weren't willing to make. Other people, well, they wanted to avoid going through another 4 years with the possibility that they would just have a similarly bad experience like they did in 2000. Pete said that a few of them decided that they would stick with it, though. In fact, three of them. And they knew that if they would band together in order to be leaders for this upcoming team, then they might could have a positive impact. And so three members of this 2000 team competed in the eights in 2004, held in Athens. During the months leading up to the games, there was a lot of peer accountability among these three veterans. The younger members, they just grew to rely on these guys in leadership roles. And those three provided that leadership not by some structure. It was just kind of organic. They just kind of rotated leadership based strictly on whatever the need was at the time and whoever stepped up. Didn't structure anything. Just did what needed to be done. The veterans, these three, they were on a mission. They were on a mission to make sure that they did not repeat the mistakes of the Sydney Games. The goal, it was exactly the same as it was back in 2000, to win the gold. And in 2004, the U.S. Men's 8 did win gold. In fact, they won it decisively, largely because they had learned to embrace a culture of accountability. What does accountability mean? Means different things to different people. There is an emotional component of how people feel when being held accountable. The authors cite in early Greek civilization, citizens would cast a vote by stepping on a stone, and that's how they would account for themselves and demonstrate quite literally where they stood. Accountability doesn't tend to be a favorite word among most people, though, because somewhere along the way, it got a bad reputation. I mean, people can think of it as punishment. We can think of it as being mean-spirited. The authors discovered some things when they looked at the education system in Finland. Now, Finland, it ranks among the very top in the world in reading, science, and math, and their education system has a heavy emphasis on investment in professional development of teachers. They don't spend hardly any money or time measuring learning outcomes through standardized testing like we do here in the States. They have created a culture where teachers accept responsibility for teaching their students, and the teachers are given the freedom to do it based on the needs of the school and the individual students. There is no word in Finnish for accountability. And instead, accountability has been described as, quote, something that is left when responsibility has been subtracted. And so it appears to have such a negative connotation that the language just doesn't even have a word to really describe it. One CEO in a peer advisory group, he said this about accountability to his fellow members. And I'm quoting, "Do you realize that this is one of the few places where we can go to get the support that comes across as unconditional love, unvarnished, with no other strings attached? There are few places where we can go in life where somebody doesn't have an agenda, doesn't want something from us. This is one of the few places where we can show up and hold one another accountable to keep that level of behavior in front of us at all times." Well, the authors ask the question, what CEO needs more accountability? I mean, they have talked with lots and lots of CEOs over the course of writing this book, and through the years they discovered that CEOs can declare, we've already got a lot of people that we're accountable to professionally. But as they point out, there is an accountability dilemma. Former Vistage CEO Raphael Pastor, he created a CEO accountability model where the CEO is at the center, and right above him on top is the board. Off to one side are peers. On the other side are customers. And below are employees. Now, Raphael says that CEOs are already being held accountable up, down, sideways. He calls that upward accountability to that board of directors or the shareholders. It's enforced accountability. The goals and objectives, they are set for the CEO by those folks. CEO can't do one thing about it. I mean, it's, as he says, it's enforced. Employees hold the CEO accountable, and they are below. But Raphael calls that expectant accountability. It's based on what that group expects. And all CEOs have customers to whom they're accountable. He calls them elusive. It's elusive because, as we all know, in serving customers, they're fickle. They can be with you today, and they can be gone tomorrow. They can buy from you today and buy from someone else tomorrow. So you really have to be sharp, and you have to give the market what it wants and what it will pay for. And so you have enforced accountability above, expectant accountability below, and elusive accountability off to the side with customers. Three types of accountability. Raphael points out accurately that these are all imposed on the CEO. And that's why some CEOs might resist adding more accountability to their life. And that brings up what Raphael calls the fourth type of accountability, empathetic. Empathetic. That's the accountability provided by peers. It's the type of accountability that is missing because, well, it's completely voluntary. The other types, they're imposed. And because peer accountability is voluntary, it stands apart from all the others. It helps CEOs deliver more effectively on the other three types. That's why top-performing CEOs don't mind volunteering to add another dimension of accountability to the mix. A professional peer advisory group acts like a lab for personal and professional growth. Raphael also notes, quote, look, this is a place where you ought to try out as much stuff as you can, and it is totally okay to fail. Better to fail in here before you show up to the board. Well, authors Shapiro and Batari, co-authors of this book, they cite an example of a CEO who was encouraged to give a board presentation to her peer group first. At first, she rejected the idea to present this thing to the group before she went to her board, but finally she agreed. And it was an ambitious presentation. In fact, it was an ambitious initiative. She was going to deliver to her board a proposal that would require a $55 million investment to build a container center at the port. She was in Malaysia. Well, she delivered the presentation to her peer group. They tore it to pieces. It was aggressive. It was impersonal. And with her permission, they offered suggestions on how to improve it. Well, of course, she was taken aback at first, but she was very grateful, for the help and super grateful that she had done it in front of them instead of her board. Well, at the next meeting, she reported that her board told her it was the best presentation that they had seen. And they asked her how she did it. And she credited her peer advisory group. She trusted their judgment. She made the changes that were necessary, and she delivered to her board a very successful presentation. It's just one example of the power of peers. When accountability gets personal, Walter and Debbie are architects. They're married to each other. They started their business shortly after they got married. It began in a closet in the bedroom of their first home. Today, it's a $30 million architecture firm. Walter, he has been a member of a professional peer advisory group for 8 years. And of course, during that time, the group has seen him raise 3 daughters and grow his business. The conversations in his group, they've touched every area of his life. During one meeting, he revealed that he had not done very much at all to set up trust for his 3 daughters or even to get his financial affairs in order. I mean, what if something happened to him? What if something happened to his wife, Debbie, a partner in the business? And heaven forbid, what if something happened to them both? Debbie always wanted to handle it, but Walter, he would drag his feet. And when he brought this up to the group, he agreed to follow their advice and get right on it. Well, as the group continued to meet, Walter, he just pushed it off. Yeah, he claimed one excuse or another, but the group was pretty relentless. And they continued to raise the issue with him every single meeting for nearly a year. Toward the end of the year, they began to send him emails saying, "We're going to bring tar and feathers to the next meeting. And if you have not taken action by then, we're going to use it." They didn't let him off the hook. Finally, he did get his affairs in order. He shared that with the group and they broke out. They broke out in jubilant hand clapping and celebration. So happy that after a year, Walter had finally taken action. A culture of accountability. Many CEOs and business owners can relate to Walter and that temptation to delay something, put something off. We've all done it. I mean, many times we put it off and we put it off. And then we finally do it only to wonder, you know, why didn't I do that a long time ago? This chapter in the book, it cites the research of 3 experts who say there are 15 key reasons that people put things off. And here they are. Number 1, ignorance. I didn't know I was supposed to do that. Number 2, skill deficiency. I don't know how to do it. Number 3, they call apathy 1. I really don't want to do this. Number 4, apathy number 2. It really doesn't make any difference if I put this off. Number 5, apathy number 3. No one really cares whether I do this or not. Number 6, apathy 4. I need to be in the mood. I'm not. Number 7, fixed habits number 1. But I've always done it this way and it's hard to change. Number 8, fixed habits number 2. I know I can pull this out at the last minute. Number 9, fixed habits number 3. I work better under pressure. Number 10, inertia. I just can't seem to get started. Number 11, frail memory. I just forgot. Number 12, physical problems. I couldn't do it. I was sick. Number 13, appropriate delays number 1. I'm just waiting for the best time to do it. Number 14, appropriate delays number 2. I need time to think this through. And number 15, appropriate delays, number 3, this other opportunity will never come again, so I can't pass it up. Now, if you didn't take notes, don't worry about it. Just go to the website, growgreat.com, find episode 5010, and you will see that list in the show notes for today's episode. Those 15 reasons that these three researchers cited in the book claim that we put things off. This is why we put things off. And I dare say, if you're like me, you probably recognized all 15. In many cases, CEOs will delegate tasks that they find uncomfortable, unpleasant, or boring. And in other situations, when as CEOs or business owners, we have to complete certain chores ourselves, we can find the same reasons to procrastinate that everybody else does. Professional peer advisory groups can play a big role in helping us take ownership and responsibility for getting the task completed. Go back to Walter's story. And there were two aspects of his story that are important. Number one, the group truly cared about Walter and his family. He told the group that getting his financial affairs in order, getting these trusts set up for his daughters, he told the group that was important to him. Well, that's why it became important to the group. The group didn't make it important. He made it important. And the group cared enough about him that they deemed it important. Number two, while it's unusual that something that important would take a year to accomplish, it demonstrates that the culture of accountability requires more than just a single follow-up. It takes some time and it takes some effort. When the task was completed, the entire group rejoiced, proving to Walter all along, and he knew this, they were on his side. Making accountability a positive. Leaders can find it difficult to hold people accountable. Some of us, we sound like accusers because, well, we haven't been taught how to make accountability a positive. So instead, it often starts off with an accusation. You know, why haven't you done this? We've all learned that what gets measured gets done. And those of us, I come from a background of commission sales. I learned at a young age, what gets rewarded gets done better. But the intent of the tracking or the measurement, that can make all the difference in the world. For too many employees, you know, it feels like all stick and no carrot. The authors cite a book that I've long had in my library. I bought it when it first came out. It's many years old now, but it's still a really good book, and I would highly recommend it as well. It's called The Oz Principle. Yeah, that Oz. Getting Results Through Individual and Organizational Accountability. It's by Roger Connors, Tom Smith, and Craig Hickman. And again, don't worry about writing this down. Just go to the website, growgreat.com, find episode 5010. I'll have all of this listed there. Well, the authors define accountability as, quote, a personal choice to rise above one's circumstances and demonstrate the ownership necessary for achieving desired results. To see it, own it, solve it, and do it. And the authors, they use an above the line and a below the line metaphor. Below the line thinking and behavior is victim thinking. Above the line behavior is accountability. So they cite 4 steps to accountability or above the line behavior. And here's what they include. Number 1, see it. Recognize and acknowledge the full reality of the situation. See it. Number 2, own it. Accept full responsibility for your contribution to the current experience. Number 2, own it. Number 3, solve it. Change the current reality by identifying and implementing solutions to your problem while being conscious of below-the-line behaviors if challenges present themselves. Number 3, solve it. And fourthly, do it. Fully commit to follow through with the solutions identified, especially when there's a great risk in doing it. Number 4, do it. Now, they contrast that with victim thinking, which they term as below-the-line behavior. And they point out 6 things. Number 1, the ignore and deny stage. That's where you pretend there isn't a problem. What problem? I don't see a problem. Number two, the it's not my job stage. When you're aware that there is a problem, but you avoid any involvement. It's not my job. Number three, the finger pointing stage. That's when you deny responsibility for bad results, and so you shift the blame to somebody else. Well, it's not my fault. It's their fault. Number four, the confusion, tell me what to do stage. That's when you avoid responsibility by claiming confusion. Number five, the cover your tail stage. That's when you create stories about why you're not responsible and you give all these reasons why you shouldn't be blamed. And number six, the wait and see stage. That's when you know there's a problem that requires action, but you choose not to act. Instead, you hope that things will just magically improve. You recognize any of those? I do. Greg Buston, author of a book, Accountability, the Key to Driving a High-Performance Culture, he identified seven pillars upon which you can build a culture of accountability. I know in today's episode there's a lot of lists, so please, I would encourage you, go to the website, growgreat.com, and just find episode 5010, and you can see these. This is one of those things, at least for me, maybe you're not like me, but I have found that list, it's just easier when I can see them. So I would encourage you, check out the show notes for today's episode. It's all found right there. Better yet, buy the book. But the author cite Greg Buston, this author of a book called Accountability, and he identifies seven pillars upon which you can build a culture of accountability. And here they are. Number one, character. Number two, unity. Number three, learning. Number four, tracking. Number five, urgency. Number six, reputation. And number seven, evolving. Now, they say just a little bit about each one, not much, but accountability starts with the character of a person. I mean, it really is about making sure that the bonds created in a group, in a peer advisory group, are really strong, but they don't interfere with a member's responsibility. If you don't have people of character, yeah, come on, all bets are off. And social interactions, they're terrific, they're great, but at the end of the day, we are not participating in a professional peer advisory group for that. We are there as peers to give feedback. We are there to grow. We're there to help one another. I'm not discounting, and the author certainly don't discount, the value of social interaction, but it's not the purpose for being together in a peer advisory group. Being open to learn, that number three item, learning, it's another component. Members have got to be coachable, got to be willing and eager to learn, willing and eager to grow and improve. Urgency, really more about focus than speed. It's about priorities, really. It's about putting first things first, doing what really matters. Reputation, number six. A reputation is what you earn when you display strong character over time. Eh, we know that. And hopefully you have a good reputation. Hopefully you care about your reputation. Greg offers a quote that he once read in an article about Babe Ruth. Yesterday's runs don't win today's games. And that's what evolving is all about. It's about getting better. The chapter closes with a little snippet about legacy. Legacy. You know, over time, members in a professional peer advisory group, they can come and go, and they can come and go for a variety of reasons. A business owner might sell the business. Somebody might retire. A father might opt out after selling the business to the son. Maybe the son takes his place in the group. But it's important for the group to grow, no matter. The comings and goings, the group collective has to grow. And the culture and experience of the group accumulates, and that leaves a legacy. Many professional peer groups have a 3-month lead time for departure. So if you wanted to leave a group, then give them 3 months notice. And part of that is for business reasons to fill that void. But maybe the bigger part of that is the lead time that the departure needs. Because groups have a culture and groups leave a legacy, and the members need time to say goodbye. They need time to say thank you. They need time to wind this thing down for this member who's going to leave. We need time to seize the opportunities of leaving a legacy in our quest to get better. Well, In summary, peer influence is individual. And the authors have said that to us before, but it's completely true. Peer influence is individual, but peer advantage is a group endeavor. And it's powered by greater selectivity, targeted strategies for achieving the goals, and structured engagement to inspire lasting results. That, ladies and gentlemen, is precisely the objective of the Peer Advantage by Bula Network. I'm currently accepting applications for membership in two groups, 7 people in each group, with me facilitating both groups, 7 small to medium business owners from around the United States. Each group will meet online by way of a video conferencing platform that makes it super easy, super convenient for members to attend. We will meet for 2 hours twice a month. One group will meet in the morning, another group will meet in the afternoon. Members are going to join one or the other. You can visit thepeeradvantage.com for more details and to complete the application. And I hope that you'll do that. I really, truly hope that you'll do that. If any of this resonates with you at all, if you see any value at all in growing as a leader, in growing as an owner, in growing your business, in growing your life, visit thepeeradvantage.com and apply. Now, the next time we're going to dive into part 3 of the book. And part 3 is entitled Leading with Peer Advantage. And we're going to tackle chapter 9. Chapter 9 is entitled The Advantage of Individual Growth. It's a good book, and it certainly is thought-provoking. And I would strongly encourage you to buy the book, read the book. And as you've listened to these summaries, I really would encourage you, roll these things over in your mind. Dwell on these things a little bit. Think about these things. Look in the mirror and make application. Listen, it's all about growth. And it all is about your performance as a person. And so that you can help the people in your company grow, so that you can have the impact that you want to have with your business, for greater revenue, greater profitability, and just greater growth in every area of your life. My name is Randy Cantrell. I appreciate you clicking play. I hope you will subscribe to the podcast. You can do that by going to growgreat.com. Till next time, welcome inside the Yellow Studio.